a choice right now, between fear and love. It's just a rock.
Out of the dark night of ignorance and into the shining light of truth.
Expounding reality.
A population of citizens capable of critical thinking.
We don't see things as they are, we see them as we are.
There's a level of reality where everything dissolves into an ocean of energy.
We empower our experience by insisting on our authenticity.
That's very profound.
Very.
Expanding reality.
Welcome to Expanding Reality. I am your host, Brandon Thomas. On this incredibly special episode 300, I am joined not only by my beautiful wife, Mary, but also Ksenia Moore and David Matheson. As well, for the audio-only audience, highly recommend the video version of this located down in the show description, where we are joined by incredibly cool artist, Derek Bastian. His website and all the ways to find him, of course, are going to be located down in the show description, as well as all of our guests. Now, this incredibly cool conversation takes many spins and turns, and we are absolutely grateful for it, but it absolutely continues in the afterthought. So, a wonderful way to support your favorite show, check the link down in the show description, as well as the video version that will be located down there, where our dear friend from Australia, special guest Jess, joins us for our afterthought. Again, guys, a wonderful way to support your favorite show. Check the link down in the show description for all the ways to find that and much more. But for now, and without any further ado, episode 300. Welcome to the 300th episode of Expanding Reality. Joining me first and foremost is my beautiful, beautiful wife. She has joined us on a couple of hangouts. Just want to thank this rock of mine for getting me through this 300 episodes. Holy shit. Dude, when I was painting this room, when I was creating the intro song, my God, I kept having you run in here and go, do you hear a difference? I like add something. You're like, yeah, I hear it. And it's okay.
I did.
Thank you so much. Just for really, for being here. Just thank you. Oh, my rock. All right. How to find her and our amazing special guests are going to be linked down below, which do include Ksenia Moore, David Matheson. Oh, my God. So fucking cool that this is happening. I'm just elated. Just all this. We're going to have an amazing conversation here with some incredible folks for this very special occasion. Also, absolutely want to mention to the audio-only audience, go ahead and click that link down in the show description that will get you to the video version of this. It is hosted absolutely for free in multiple places. Could not recommend watching our creative expansion artist at work here, Derek Bastian, and you can find him at Bastian Metal Creations, which will be located as well down in the show description. I just want to thank our very special artist for showing what he does here. And guys, I could not recommend this video version more. So to kick it off here, just want to catch up with y'all, say hi. Just thank you so much again for doing this. Thank you again, listeners, for the 300 episodes here. David and Ksenia, what have y'all been up to, you know?
Firstly, congratulations on 300 episodes. That's so exciting. And we're honored to be a part of the 300th episode.
Yeah, thank you for inviting us to be part of 300. You know, there's a movie called 300, which is based on the Battle of Thermopylae and the Spartans. But also, so, I mean, that's ancient Greece. And there's celestial aspects to some of the aspects of that story, I believe, some of the details in the story. But also, I was thinking of the number 30 in ancient Egypt was when a pharaoh would do his Hebsed
festival
or celebration ritual, and it was like a renewal. The Heb said they did a, it was like they would run around a courtyard and they would do demonstrations of strength, and it was like the pharaoh would become young again. It was like, let's say you've been reigning for 30 years, let's say you started when you were 18, at 30 year mark you'd be 48, so it's like, oh, I'm 18 again. Anyway, it's like a renewal, but that number 30 ties into...
Mary could probably tell us. What takes a cycle of 30?
Your Saturn return, is that right?
It's pretty much Saturn returns 29. So
Saturn's all about time and father time and returning to the beginning. And I didn't know Derek was going to be here. Is Saturn associated with metal in any way?
Lead.
Lead. Mm. So pewter or cutlery or, you know, I don't know. I didn't know that we're, but like all that stuff looks very Saturnian to me. Anyway, it's very cool to be here on your 30 times 10 episode. It's a new beginning and a celebration of like a circuit.
Yeah. It's, yeah, that's beautiful. Absolutely. Thank you. And I'm sure he's got some lead kicking around that shop out there.
A bit of lead pipe somewhere in the Cluedo game. Sorry.
We call it Clue.
We just watched that movie.
Yeah, we did.
The lead pipe is in the parlor.
Yeah, with Colonel Mustard, right? Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, great movie. By the way, gang, if you've never seen it or heard of it, or you think you're too young for it or too old for it or something like that, no, you're not. It's a phenomenal movie. It's feel good, and it's a wonderful.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I haven't seen it either. We're adding it to the list.
What?
Right
now. With tonight's movie, I think.
There you go. What
it's
a great
fun.
You
got
a
list. It's a lot of
fun. God, that is awesome. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so much. We've already kicked off so much. I also absolutely want to shout out the work of the good folks here. Again, reminding everybody that they will be located down below. Thank you again, our personal signed copy that we got from you in Australia. You just went to town on this thing right in front of us, and we appreciate that. Right when we got there.
Beautiful.
It was a very special visit from Brandon and Mary.
God, that was so cool. So really before we get into
do
it,
your
let's
viewers
talk-
know that you married us?
I think so. I mean, I've sort of half-assed mentioned it. I haven't, you know, I've mentioned, oh, we went to Australia and, oh, we married David Kassinia, and but I haven't, like, talked about it, I don't think. But do you guys want to, I would love to talk about it with
Let's
you guys. That was kind of another reason. Yeah.
It was so awesome. Like, it was such an honor to have you both there, but to also be married by you, Brandon, was very, very special.
Presiding over the ceremony and Mary also reading sacred poetry and...
Yeah,
that's it.
So cool.
In the woods of Gunbower Island along the Murray River, separating Victoria and New South Wales, Australia.
So if any of your viewers are planning on getting married, they should get in touch.
Ooh, you know, I've gotten pricey since you guys, actually. So,
we'll 30,000 because of
it.
The number 30.
Of the 30.
That's right,
yeah,
on the
exactly.
Three, yeah, on account of the 30. It was incredible. Australia's largest inland island. If I'm accurate in the history, and absolutely beautiful. Yeah, got up to New South Wales, saw heaps of dead kangaroos, and so Ksenia was tired of that, and she took us through the bush. We followed the yurt, and
the,
ute. Yeah. That's right, the car truck. David can tell you all about that. That's amazing. But you took us through the bush on this amazing trek, and you made sure that we saw kangaroos. And
yeah,
so just
so cool.
You guys made that such an amazing and special trip. I mean, you put us up. Everything was incredible. All the people were amazing. Some of the sweetest folks we have ever met. We still talk about how Kiwi rags on Australians like all the time. We talk about how he says y'all's eyes are too close together and shit. He was just bagging. It was just such an amazing group of people, such an incredible feeling. And just to be a part of it, just to, you know, helping screw the stage down with you, David, and, you know, you teaching me how to moonwalk.
Yeah,
I still attempt it, you know, to this day, you know, but.
Very bad teacher. You should find a better teacher.
You're a great teacher.
On YouTube.
That video is what I refer to. I'm like, okay, stop, click. Okay, snap, got it. It's awesome to refer back to, but that trip was
you'll have to insert the video into this conversation.
You want to put the video? Right, I need to note things like that, Ksenia. Okay, so we're going to vid in, okay, moonwalk. Okay.
Kangaroos.
Kangaroos, yeah.
Are we going to add a whole montage in here? Okay, kangaroos.
Just our whole trip.
Got it. And we'll put we got to meet somebody absolutely amazing, Jess, and we actually saw a koala as well, and so I'll put that in there. Mm. Okay.
That means you're very pure in heart, because I still have not seen a koala. It's very
I haven't seen one in the
rare
world.
To see them in the wild.
Really?
You
what?
Are blessed. I've heard you got to go to the Great Ocean Road.
I have heard that too. Apollo Bay has a lot apparently.
But no,
I just haven't been
not
to the
seen
right
one
places.
Yet. We've been out in the bush a lot, but I've pet one in a nature zoo.
Park, kind of, we were hoping we'd see some emus too when you were with us, but they were all a bit skittish on the evening drive through the bush.
Did you see some emus?
I think we saw some on the drive somewhere.
Yeah, because when we left you guys, we met up with Jess, and we went through about four different cities, Castlemaine and back to Bendigo.
You're incredible.
And Castle. Oh, we loved it. And yeah. that I think we did see
4 days. You saw more in 4 days than I think I've seen in 50 years here.
Capped it off with a koala. I mean, we flew out the next day. So
and a kookaburra.
And a kookaburra,
and,
yeah.
And the wedge-tailed
eagles. We saw a pair of those, which was really cool. Yeah. Y'all's only aerial predator.
That's what Jess was saying, yeah. We'll have to hook you up, though, with Jess and her boyfriend, Joel.
Yeah.
Because they see koalas all the time. They have this certain walk, nature walk, that they took us on, and they see them all the time there. So
they're really close to us. I think they're in Ballarat.
Yeah.
They're Ballarat. It's like a couple hours away, right?
Worth the drive.
They're amazing.
Okay.
Is it like an hour? Okay. Yep. Worth the drive. Absolutely amazing. Jess and Joel are incredible. And Joel's a wildlife like guy. That's what he does. So he will take you to this one spot that we went to. It's an incredible hike anyway. It's real quick in and out. It's not, it's long. Not long. You'll want to spend more time in there. But that's where we saw it. We were walking and this is like 50, 60 feet up in that damn.
Yeah. Very top of the tree.
Way up. And this chunky monkey sitting up there. And I was like, oh, there he is.
Yeah.
And Jess was like, you fucking legend, mate. I was like, yes. To have an Australian call you a legend. I know, because I knew what you were doing.
Doesn't get better than that.
All you need in your life. That's it. God, well, we're just like, I can't tell you what an honor it was, honestly. Just so beautiful, so special. And just thank you again. Just really, it was just such a cool thing.
It was one of the best trips ever. Yeah.
And we are getting into astrocartography. Have you guys ever heard about this and have you looked into it at all?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on it?
What do you think of it?
Oh, it's amazing. But I will just say that. So for those who don't know who are listening, you might want to explain it too, but it's where you find your best place to either go for a holiday or to live based on certain lines that run through the Earth from the placements of your planets when you were born. So it's very individual, you know, where, like, for example, if I'm in California, it's really good for my career, to be honest, because my career planet, Jupiter, runs through California. So to be in California means great things for my career.
What does that mean, runs through California? Just
so there's a map. I don't know if I can share the screen. Can I share screen?
Not yet. But
2 seconds.
I'm fascinated by what Derek is also.
Yes.
Looks like he's got the head of a bird going already.
Let's use this time as I find this option for you to point out our creative expansion artist. How cool is that? We're just speaking, and then all of a sudden, it's like flash of light. Oh, he's micro welding something incredible over there.
So cool.
So cool.
Like from the forge.
Yeah.
Coming from the fires.
Look how it,
but on like a wee scale, dude. You know what I mean? He sent us a picture of this spider that he did that was just tiny, man. And he's it's like welding with a microscope. It's
incredible. Look at that helmet.
I know, it's a cool helmet.
It's dope. Yeah.
So he's obviously got the camera on his forehead. And he's.
Love it.
It's so cool.
He's probably welded something together to make that happen. Okay, you have absolutely the ability to
share
screen, my friend.
Mm-hmm. All right. Give me 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Okay, so it just so happens I've been looking at my own astrocartography lately, and this is a map of my astrocartography lines. And so, for example, where are we? Here in Australia. This is a line, I think it's Neptune from memory. I have to just scroll across. Oh no, there's my Jupiter line running through Australia. So it's good for my career here too. Actually, is this me? Yeah, this is me. So this is quite ironic that you mentioned this because I've been looking at it lately myself. And so you've got these lines that run through based on where the planets were when you were born that show, you know, if you were to go for a holiday to somewhere that was, say, a Pluto line, well, you'd probably have a very intense experience, and it could be quite life-changing, quite redirectioning and transformative for you. Venus line, you'd have a romantic time. It'd probably be great to go there with your lover or whatever, or you might even meet somebody. So astrocartography is amazing like this. And Mary, if I'm cutting your lunch, please say. I'll stop share here, but that's one of the things that you can use to determine where is good for you to be in the world, to live or for a holiday or something. And then there's also... Oh, I haven't got it here. Okay, never mind about that. I won't worry. But you can also cast your chart instead of using your birth time. Let's say I was born over here in Victoria. If I was to change my birthplace, same day, same birth time, but if I put my place at, say, Montevideo?
Montevideo.
Then I would have my planets would be in different houses. So instead of Jupiter in the first house, I might have Jupiter in the 10th house. And that whole new setup of the planets in their houses would mean a whole different experience for me if I ever went to be in Montevideo, because the chart would change. So for many people who have a astrology chart and they think it's shit and it's like, oh, this, you know, I've got whatever yucky bad things they don't like. You can't, for example, if you have Saturn and Venus together in the chart, you can't change that, but you might be able to take it out of the fifth house of love and romance and put it somewhere, you know, somewhere else. If you, you know, if it's stopping you from falling in love because it's in the fifth house, going somewhere else where it moves to a different place will put that emphasis in a different area of your chart and give you a different life experience. So people like to, when they have a solar return, sometimes people like to go to a different country and be in a different country for their solar return, where their planets are going to be at the best possible position at the moment the sun returns to the place it was when you were born. This happens every year on your birthday, and people will go to a certain part of the world to get the best results. But my teacher, Ernst Wilhelm, and I agree with him, says it's actually a waste of time and effort, because if it's not in your birth chart, the chart you were born with, to be a multi-billionaire or to, you know, marry in a certain year or whatever, going to another part of the world is not going to make any difference if it's not already in your birth chart. So when he does solar returns and when I do solar return analysis, we always cast it from the birthplace. But, you know, if you want to have a play, if people want to get into that sort of thing, it can be quite an interesting experiment to do. And so I'll ask you, did you guys feel any sort of different energy? Obviously, it's a different country and a different culture, but within you, did you feel any different when you were in Australia?
100%. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, big time. It was like home. Yeah. It really
felt like we were home.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm saying overthrow your government, we'll buy property.
I mean, we're not kidding when we say we want to, you know, live there, visit there as much as we can. I mean, we felt amazing the whole time.
We'd like to get rid of the government too, and you know, and
then, can you edit all that stars part out?
Yeah. We're not getting rid of the government.
Oh, I mean it. That's an American saying it, so I will cast that shit over here. But yes, no, we loved it. We absolutely loved Australia. We just felt, like I said, at home. We wanted to see more. We loved the people. Like,
I mean, we cried when we left.
I was crying in the airport. Yeah, I was standing in the line to get on board and just cried.
Yeah,
and I was just like, I don't know what's going on, but I just love this place. And it's definitely, it was y'all, you know, I mean, it was just everything, the land itself, it felt honestly a lot like Texas, to be honest.
It did, in a lot of ways, yeah.
When we were driving around out there, besides being on the other side and all that, the layout, just sort of this expansiveness of it, the vibe, the, what are they called?
The vibe of
Bogans. Everybody was just, Bogans is like their, how do you want to say it? Like rural folk?
Rednecks?
Rednecks is kind of a sweet way to say it.
Yeah. I mean, I liked all the Bogans.
Oh, that's our people.
Met.
We live in it. My neighbor's my favorite Bogan ever. Yeah. He didn't own a shirt with sleeves, and I love the man dearly. Yeah. Like, he will do anything for you.
But see, you can have city Bogans, whereas I don't know, can you have city rednecks? I don't know that. A lot of Bogans live in the city.
Yeah,
but those are usually folks like impersonating cowboys and stuff like that, or they like, you know, grew up on the farm and just wanted to escape, like the young Amish kids are doing. They're like, I like cell phones, so fuck this, and they're like moving into the city, you know. So they have all this practical knowledge, but they also have a thirst for technology and all that. So yeah, that exists.
But I played around with astrocartography just like a couple of days ago, and we both live near our Pluto line. And we have really good lines going through Australia. And then we also have really, both of our Jupiter line goes through the eastern part of the U.S. where we have kind of been.
Yeah, we had the event in northern Georgia, eastern Tennessee, west North Carolina, that area. Just it's kind of centralized in that, and both of our Jupiter lines happen to be really close together in that area.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Yeah, I live like 5 minutes away from my Pluto line, and I've lived here my entire life.
Oh yeah, that's good for awakening.
Intense.
Good for awakening, but he is the god of the underworld.
Yeah, we're ready to move. Yeah, we've been very called to move. Yeah, very called.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll do a stop off and get some property in Georgia, and then Australia after that, for sure.
Yeah, Jupiter lines, Venus lines, they're all, you know, all the delightful things. Mercury, you'll learn a lot. Mars, get a lot of self-assertion and self-will, but you probably have a lot of conflict with people on a Mars line, I imagine.
But it sounds useful in the fact that, like, if you're deciding for two different destinations, let's say, or if you're deciding to go to different universities, you can look at this and say, well, if I go on my Mars, this one's actually on my Mars line, and I'm dead split, but I'm going to learn a lot there. So Mercury line. Yeah. So I'm going to learn a lot there. Let's go, you know, go with that one. That seems like a useful way to use this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Vacations are interesting.
Is.
David, have you done this?
What you want to get out of a holiday, you know?
And that's true too.
That's true, yeah.
That's interesting as well.
Yeah, well, I to be honest, I haven't really looked at Dave's chart for relocation. I should, because he's the one who's moved out.
I know, he's all like there. It's like his Pluto line. You're like, oh shit. Have you felt
okay?
Might
explain everything.
Yeah, how do you feel, Dave?
How do you feel since moving out there, man? That's a massive thing that I don't think a lot of people talk about. You just picked everything up, the love of your life, and just with nothing, with just your didgeridoo and a smile, you went out there. And I love that you took sand to the beach, by the way. You have this didgeridoo that you've packed up and shipped over there. Beautiful story. I love it. So how are you feeling with that big change, man? How amazing.
Didgeridoos are very powerful. Brandon, Mary, and listeners, the didgeridoo is a powerful force.
Dave started learning didgeridoo 2 weeks before he met me. It was 2 weeks, wasn't it?
It was. It shipped to me on the 30th of June, and all my buddies from high school arrived that weekend, so I didn't get to play with it until like the beginning of July, and then
we met in August.
In August, so
wow,
yeah,
wow.
Be careful.
Hold me in.
What year?
Yes,
yeah, what powerful. Was this?
21.
Yeah, same year we started the show. Isn't that wild?
That's crazy.
Wow. Mm. This is just so interesting. Just the whole damn thing. And then I met, of course, David. Listened to you on a Jay Hinahan's podcast. Loved the episode. And this is the first year show.
Right. Yeah.
And then Jay out of the blue, by the way, after I'd listened to the episode, connected us. Kind of one of your things. Started playing didgeridoo, and then we met. I heard the episode, and then he goes, hey, you should meet this guy. We connected, and then, of course, you suggested Ksenia, and then Ksenia was, you know, part of the family immediately, so this just all makes sense. I mean, this is just so cool. And now here we are.
Share a little more about how what it's been so we can reel you guys in.
We'll
stop playing the didgeridoo to draw you on.
It's interesting.
Like a siren.
It is, there are parallels to Texas, and they're not necessarily direct parallels, but I was back for the April total eclipse in Texas for the first time in many years, revisiting Texas. And I do know the Texas is not covered with gum trees, which we call eucalyptus trees, but you're right about the rolling, and California has some geographical similarities too with the rolling hills and golden. But I think that kind of sense of place, or the
people,
you know, that's what I'm trying to say. Like people having a sense of place. Texans have a sense of place. Like there's Texas flags everywhere. I'd forgotten seeing Texas flags everywhere but it's kind of a confidence or a like a security that you have of. I'm not expressing this necessarily right, but people in Australia are by and large very salt of the earth, very good, solid, and grounded and fun, wicked sense of humor, people. And there is a similarity there to Texas in being grounded. Like it's a kind of a groundedness, like a.
You often talk about the state of politics or community and culture as well, being like Australia is, according to you, 10, 15 years behind where America currently is in culturally.
In terms of,
you guys got the mullets going. Yeah.
We still have mullets.
Here. Which I love, by the way. Mullets. I love it. That's what I was really going for with this. I just
we
undercut it
we
and everything. I was like, oh, give me a mullet.
Yeah. That's not
it's
a mullet.
It's not a mullet.
No, it's not. It was gonna.
They also have skullets where you like shave everything except, and then you have like a curtain in the back.
Oh, wow. So bad.
That's a skullet. There's all kinds of interesting haircuts, but it's what I'm trying to get to is just kind of place does matter. And I don't know, there's something about the energy of a place that,
I think there's a security that Australian people have. We have in our Australian astrology chart, we have the moon in Taurus, and the moon in global or mundane astrology represents the mass, the people of a country. And to have the people in Taurus, like the moon is exalted in Taurus, it's about material stability and security. And I think there is a sense, forgive me if I'm talking over you, honey, but there's a sense here of, there's still struggle, and the world feels like it's going to pieces in many ways, but we're still materially okay. We're still materially safe. And I think that in some parts of America, from what Dave has told me and what I've seen, that there's a feeling of precariousness, security, like the rug is being pulled out from under a lot of people. And that impacts the culture and the society and your ability to feel at home, safe, a belonging in a place. Does that make sense? Have I explained that?
Yeah,
that's really good. And I would say that building on the economic or the kind of the global financial project, Wall Street, private equity, the reason why house prices are soaring is because of financial engineering, it's a way of sucking wealth up to the financial sector. Your mortgage, if you're paying $1 million mortgage on a house that in 1950 was literally $50,000, the house itself hasn't gotten better. In fact, it's fallen apart more, but the mortgage payments are larger, the insurance company. So that project of financial, like the global financial centers in the US, it's
Wall Street,
New York. There's also Silicon Valley is, you know, all these stock options, like those engines of major financial transformation, which are for the most part negative in terms of destroying it. What it's doing is sucking the middle class existence is much more
strange,
out of reach. In the 50s, you could have basically a middle class existence with one
income
parent working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could have an Airstream trailer today. You know, you enter a lottery if you want to win an Airstream trailer. But the centers of that are not necessarily in Texas.
No,
they're in the city of London. They're in London. They're in New York, Bay Area. They're not in Texas. They're not in Australia. Those are destabilizing influences. The global financial rush towards hollowing things out, it has a very short term, not a long term. Not like a farmer has a long term. Finance has a short term, quarter to quarter profits. Anyway, I'm maybe going off on a tangent, but I think that when you say Australia has not been hollowed out, but we're here in Australia more where the US was in the 80s. You see some of these policies going on and you say, why are they running that same playbook? But it's in the US, it's been running for a little bit longer.
And neoliberalism,
if that makes sense.
Thanks to Reagan was,
yeah.
But anyway, you probably don't
want to talk about it. Right? It's an interesting.
No, it's all related.
So what, and it's, it seems to be also, you know, reflected in the stars, which you people both work in. So what about this new astrology stuff that's going on right now? Cause we've, you wrote down here, B sextile forming between the outer planets. And does this mean positive, and hope positive for mankind?
Yes. So, in 2020, wait, I mean, there's so much to talk about here. This is such a big topic. In 2020, we had the grand conjunction of Saturn and Jupiter. This happens every 20 years, and it sets the tone for the next 20-year cycle until they meet again. And it's a bit like, you know how the moon, when you have a new moon, the moon and the sun are together in the sky and the moon you can't see. But then as the month proceeds, the moon grows bigger and bigger. And then halfway through the month, you get a full moon. And then the moon starts to wane and wane and wane and back to the new moon. And that's the cycle round and round and round every month. Saturn and Jupiter have a similar cycle, but it's 20 years long. So initially, they came together in 2020 in Aquarius, an air sign, and in 20 years' time, they will have gone through the whole cycle and come back together. They'll go through a square, which is happening now in the world. Then they'll trine one another, and then they'll full moon it, and or full opposition.
180 degrees.
And so on.
So those are degrees. When you say a square and a trine, that's like degrees of separation, basically, along that circle.
That's right. Mm. That's exactly right. So this happened in 2020, and it was part of the reason why the early 2020s were full of such upheaval, but not definitely not the whole reason, because it happens every 20 years, and we don't go through a, you know, COVID BS kind of rubbish every 20 years. There were other things happening. There was a Pluto conjunction, and those outer planets were up to no good that caused so much upheaval. Before we get on to the outer planets, I will just say that this grand conjunction, as it's called, that happens every 20 years with Saturn and Jupiter, they're two visible planets. And in ancient astrology, visible planets had so much importance because they corresponded to the existence in the human body, whereas the outer planets were psychological because you can't see them with the naked eye. As above, so below. They're much more movements of the masses, movements of society and culture, their internal psychological influences upon us, everything that we can't see that influences our life in the human body. But Saturn and Jupiter are visible. It influences the life that we experience through events and circumstances in the body on the earth. So for 200 years, we have had grand conjunctions in earth signs. Now, what's been going on the planet for the last 200 years? Industrial revolution, financial expansion and growth that has happened in many countries, certainly in the West, and the West has exploited a lot of other countries, unfortunately, that have not had the same growth for the people. But just the same, the focus has been on money, resources, growth of resources, you know, expansion through industrialization and so on. 200 years, earth sign conjunctions of Saturn, Jupiter. That's why. And now we've shifted for the first time, although there's a little bit of a quantifying factor there. We did have an earth sign conjunction in Libra in the early 80s, and hence in came neoliberalism, but that's a whole other topic. We'll put that aside. but now we've had the first conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn in 2020 in an air sign, and that's going to repeat in air signs, and the air signs are Aquarius, Libra, and Gemini, for people who don't know. So over the next 200 years, so we have entered into a whole new paradigm. And we're a little bit like, well, what's this going to bring us? You know, now we're moving out of the industrial revolution. Now it's much more social revolution because air signs are social. They're intellectual. They're much more about ideologies and the, you know, the vision and the mind and what's good for humanity, what's good for people. There's some negatives around it as well. But we are entering a whole new age. Yes, we're changing also from the age of Pisces into the age of Aquarius at this juncture as well. But 200 years of air sign grand conjunctions. So we're at the beginning of a new age. And it's in many ways scary because what does it hold for us? What's going to happen? And we can see the power players in the world trying to get their little grubby fingers into the new dynamic, the new era through technology and so on. So all that to say, we're moving into this new age and there's a lot of upheaval and a lot of change. But what the ancient astrologers weren't able to do was to factor in the outer planets as well, because they couldn't see them. I mean, they might have known about them, and mythologically I think they did. Certainly back 10,000 years ago, I bet they knew about Uranus, Neptune and Pluto. But during the drop down in consciousness that happens through the yuga cycle, sorry, I know I'm talking on and on, but get me started. But through the drop down in consciousness that we've been through for the last 12,000 years, now we're in the Kali Yuga, this lowest, or emerging out of it, but this lowest age of consciousness, we've forgotten about the outer planets, and we've only just rediscovered them in the last couple of hundred years. So we're raising up in consciousness again as we rediscover all these amazing things. If anyone doesn't know about the Yuga cycle, wants to learn about it, I highly recommend a book by Joseph Selby called The Yugas. It is brilliant. I love it. And it's well worth finding out about. But anyhow, our consciousness is raising back up and we are aware of the outer planets now. So this grand conjunction cycle that's now happening for the next 200 years, every 20 years it's going to happen for the next 200 years in air signs, is also affected to an extent by what the outer planets are doing. And the outer planets being Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. And so these guys currently, like, we're going through a square of Uranus and Jupiter, which is a hard aspect, and it's tension and it's volatility. It's, you know, look at what's happening in the world right now. There's rumors of war, threats of war. I was watching somebody's astrology YouTube channel the other day and they were saying, oh, earthquakes, volcanoes, blah, blah, blah. And just everything horrible you could think of. They're predicting it's going to happen, and it might. But this person is a Vedic astrologer, and Vedic astrology only uses visible planets because they stick to their ancient tradition that's 2,000 years old. In the West, we use the new planets as well. And these new planets, I'll pull this over here if it can be seen, and I'll draw it on a board. Sorry about that.
This is awesome. This is so cool. Please.
Okay. I'm just
that's great.
So this is where the planets currently are, but you've got Uranus.
So this is the square because they're 90 degrees out of Jupiter and Saturn.
Thank you, honey. Yeah, that's 90 true.
Degrees. Okay, sorry.
We need that. So this is the square of, good point, of Jupiter and Saturn, and they've moved on from, they conjuncted here in Aquarius. Saturn has moved here by now, and Jupiter's, because it moves faster, has moved all the way around here. They're at a 90 degree angle, and that's causing a lot of these heavy predictions.
90.
Yeah.
Like a quarter moon, basically.
Mm. And eventually opposition, square, and then they'll come back to conjunction. But what is happening is we've got Uranus is here in Taurus at the latter degrees. Neptune is here in Pisces at the latter degrees. And Pluto, which moves incredibly slowly, is in the next couple of months going to go back into Capricorn at the final degrees. And what this means is they are making, that's called a sextile aspect, which is, 60 degrees. And then there's another sextile aspect between these two here. And that creates what we call, some call it a minor trine. Some people call it a B sextile. And this, I believe, is holding space for humanity right now, while all this other stuff is going on. And so planets that are forming this minor trine, two planets, 120 degrees from one another in there.
Yeah, so a sextile would be 60 degrees, mm-hmm. like you said, because if you divide a circle of 360 into six, you get 60 degrees. Six times 60 is 360. So mm-hmm. 260s, that's a trine?
Yeah. Yes, 120 degrees is a trine. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So maths was never my forte at school.
No, but 3 times 120 would be 60.
This for some 60. Reason, this makes sense, but no.
So that's why it's a trine.
And the geometry.
I'm just wondering where those names came from, and that's now I finally.
It makes sense.
First time I knew what a sextile was.
Nailed it. Yeah, I know. Nailed it. I love it. Isn't that awesome? She'll be saying something as well, and I'm just like, oh my God. And then it'll just go off on it. It's always astrology, by the way. Most these days, it's astrology. We'll be saying that.
How are you enjoying the course, guys? Are you enjoying my course?
She's crushing it, and I'm walking by all the time. So your voice is just in our home.
I know.
All
like,
the time.
It's like you live with us. You just are constantly, if it's not your school, then it's YouTube. Yeah, it's you're everywhere.
Yeah, we love you guys. So we participate in y'all's work. And yeah, so I'll just pop in and she'll go, oh my God, check this out. And she's got everybody's chart. She's she's like a chart hunter. She's sitting here in the lives and like writing everybody's birth charts down. I'm like, what are you doing? She's just like, I gotta know. And so she'll go, do you know how many Aquariuses you have in your life? And we found some fascinating, you know, just different correlations. Same with her and her signs of what she attracts, how they balance out. Just, it's been an amazing conversation in our home. So yes, all of this stuff has been fascinating. So with this then, go ahead.
I was going to say these outer planets, they correspond to the angelic realms. And I know that not everybody buys into that. But I know that you guys do believe in other dimensions, other realities. That's why your show is Expanding Reality. And these outer planets have connections to that. It's believed that Neptune has to do with the angelic realms. Pluto's god of the underworld. So that's a different... I'm reading a wonderful book on alchemy at the moment that talks about the higher angelic realms and indications that they exist, and then the lower realms, which are not necessarily bad or evil, but they exist too, with different energies, different beings. And Uranus, God knows what Uranus represents. It's a crazy planet. It's anything unique and quirky and out there. But these outer, what they represent is these outer dimensions. And our psychological self is connected to those dimensions, obviously. And so here is these outer angelic and underworld dimensions that are holding space now with this minor trine is what I wanted to include this.
So it's mitigating the square in some way? Is that what you're saying? That
it's not mitigating. I feel that it's watching over us and keeping the truly bad from happening, you know, like we hear so many ancient myths about, you know, Athena watching over Odysseus on his trip and on his journey. And there's so many stories in the Bible about the angels just watching over certain circumstances and things like that. You know, we are being held, and that's what this represents, that we are, despite everything that's going on in the world right now, we are being held. Look, society-wise, I've got some notes here.
So there's the trine is watching over the square. Is that what you're saying? Yes. Okay.
Thank you. That's great. You should come on my videos with me.
Yeah, you guys are an amazing team. Yeah,
he can be my weather girl.
Like Al Gold, fix car, Al Gold. What's up with that?
Yeah,
there's such an energy to it.
But basically, a minor grand trine or a B sextile is a good configuration. It's positive in energy because it brings opportunities, but we have to make the effort and grab them. So a grand trine is everything just lands in your lap. You win Pat's Lotto, you know, the love of your life.
Pat's,
walks in.
Pat's Lotto means lottery. I'm just going to translate.
Thank you.
Every now and then.
But for the collective, for humanity now, our society is being given an opportunity to up level, to grow in consciousness through all this these challenges. That's one of the things that we need to realize, that this minor grand trine is giving us an opportunity, and the divine is giving us an opportunity to say, well, we're sick of this old industrial revolution age shit and all the materialism and the exploitation that went along with it. Boot that. We're going to move into something new, you know, and this is the opportunity. Will we grab it? Will we take it? It's up to us, but it's there. That's what this minor grand trine represents. It also indicate, I'm just checking my notes here because I wrote down some notes. It indicates gradual change through experience, collective experiences that are gradually absorbed into the collective consciousness. And what is, I mean, look at the awakening that's happened on the planet since 2020. This is what it's referring to. And this minor grand trine has been building for a couple of years now and will last for a couple of years, actually. So it's not just, there tomorrow and then it's gone the next day. It's the energy is there and existing and building and will last for a couple of years as these planets move slowly together for a couple of years. So this is a time of absorbing, everything that happened in 2020 into the collective consciousness so that we won't go back to the same paradigm that we had before and we move beyond it. Yeah. So I wanted to talk about that because there's a lot of fear mongering out there and, I'm susceptible like anyone. I'm like, oh, shit, what's going to happen? And, oh, we're doomed. And, oh, quick, let's get out of here. And where can we flee to, So they're bringing the West down and da-da-da. But this is an opportunity. And if we see it as such, it actually gives us hope and it actually makes us keen to work towards a new future that is possible because the future's not written yet. I mean, I know time is linear, but we have a chance to perhaps change the future or bring it more in alignment with what we think is right. Anyhow, there's opportunities is what I want to say and to give people hope that it's not all doom and gloom at the moment.
Okay.
But you
well, then good.
Dave wanted to share something about Saturn.
You're doing great.
So a trine is kind of it's a good thing. It's sort of like a little umbrella that's over you on a really, it's like, dude, the sun's going to be crazy, but we got you an umbrella. So you could say trine times are like a good thing, not like trying times. You know what I mean? You could have a series called trine times.
Trine times.
And spell it like trine with an apostrophe. You get it. Anyway.
What trine day?
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be dope as shit. Yeah.
I think there was a little glitch in time. Trine day is a publishing house that will publish some books that deal with dark conspiratorial things, a lot of political conspiratorial things. Trine Day, the publisher, I've heard him on some shows. There's a show out of Canada called Black Op Radio, and it's mostly dealing with researchers on the JFK assassination, Martin Luther King assassination, Robert F. Kennedy assassination, Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s father, Senator Kennedy assassination in 68. Trine Day. So publishes a lot of those books. The publisher, he's very outspoken about, I will publish these things. So I never knew what trine was. And this is interesting. So Trine Times, check out Trine Day, books on the Trine Day label, publishing.
Shout out. Yep. We'll publish your shit too, Redigional Publishing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. Well then, I'd also absolutely want to make sure that we get to the Saturn stuff, but what is up with the, because the symbolism with all of the astrology stuff ties into sun worship, right? Sun cult worship. And it seems like maybe that the Olympics are into a little bit of that. Did you guys catch any of that stuff?
Try not to.
Yeah. Apart from the horrendous break.
Try not to catch it.
Yeah, the fever of it. Whatever. Yeah, just kind of observe it a little bit and
catch
move
whatever
on.
They're sneezing out.
Doesn't want to catch Australian breakdancing fever, that's for sure.
shots fired. I was wondering who was going to bring it up and when. We were going to be nice, and we talked about it a lot.
We don't
before.
All like, dance like
do
that.
Not
we don't.
Let me. That's what's, and I think it's a psyop, actually. I was talking to our friend Jess about this. I think it's a psyop. I think she did her performance, whatever that was, as a challenge to all Australians to get out there and breakdance, because if that's your metal example, then you can do it too. There's never been a better example of you can do it too.
That's
you
true.
Know, so think of the inspiration. I would invest in dance studios right now.
In Australia.
Right now.
The horrendous thing is she has a PhD in breakdancing and lectures about breakdancing at university. Oh my God.
But as you pointed out, somebody wrote that her PhD writings have to do with breakdancing is a phenomenon of the streets, of neighborhoods. It shouldn't be institutionalized. It shouldn't be corporatized. So anyway.
She learned that then growing up on the mean streets? of Australia, the mean streets of Bendigo, where that woman grew up.
Change subject rapidly.
Oh God, yes. So anyway, so the Venus is weird, moves. Huh? Yeah, kangaroos are fun. They got pouches. They have two nipples for different developmental stages. Did you know this? They can do a really young one and then a medium, Joey. Okay.
From that, the Olympics was crazy.
Oh yeah, so bizarre ritual.
Yeah.
Bizarre rituals and.
How do you figure it was like a sun cult thing? To my mind, it's...
Where are you going with that question?
Yeah, that dark horse, that rider on a pale horse, rather, totally out of the Book of Revelation for a start. And,
which some would say ties to the astrotheology, which makes it then part of a sun cult worship, right? So the death of the pale horse is really... Steve Falconer was talking about this, had him on. That's this tissue salts guy. Connect you with him. He was talking about that all of that, actually, Revelation, everything about it, even the Bible, all of it is really astrocartography, or astrotheology, rather. And so with that, then, the pale horse was really whenever summer came and it brought with it death. And so it's when, summer or fall came. And so with summer comes death, because that's when you're all the crops die out when it's too hot. That's when you're getting ready to slaughter animals for the winter. And so that's what the pale horse represents. And it's actually a pale green horse or a pale white horse. So it's also a mistranslation. And then the layout of the obvious Last Supper in the very beginning, that's all sun cult worship. It's all of the degrees and signs are the different disciples laid out. And he's got a great graph to show all this. So that's what makes us say sun cult worship, perhaps, and ask the question. As well, whenever that thing with the flag, whatever it is walking, it has two paths it can go down. If you guys notice this, when it's walking towards the giant golden bull, which obviously represents Taurus, as it walks, it has two paths it can go down. It chose the left one and walked down the left-hand path to go present the flag at Taurus.
I didn't see that component of the ceremony. I'd like to check it out. I mean, for those who don't know who are watching this, I mean, the horrendous London ceremony that for the London Olympics in 2012 was the, if you want to call them sun cult, the evil dickheads running the world. This was a ritual putting it out there to the world. This is what we're going to do. And what happened, it was totally a prediction of...
Hospital beds and kids running around.
Boris Johnson sitting up in a hospital bed. How the hell did they know he was going to be the Prime Minister of England in 2020 when we had all the COVID crap? How did they know that in 2012? Because it's all planned and it's all, you know, a setup. So for people who think that we're just pulling, you know, bullshit out here, there's a precedent with this ritual crap. And so, of course, when we see the Paris ceremony, we're thinking, okay, well, what are they trying to present here to us now that, you know, and I refuse to accept what they're presenting, you know, whatever it may be, whether it's, you know, that it's the destruction of humanity, that Da Vinci's painting is a painting of the last meal before Judas betrays Jesus. I mean, who's going to get betrayed here? I don't know, but I refuse to accept that the message that they're trying to send, you know?
Yeah, what I would say about the ancient scriptures around the world, so I've obviously this is what I've been researching and exploring for the past 15 years, the myths are all based on the stars. The stories that are collected into what we call the Bible are myths from one part of the world that are collected up. There were many texts floating around. Some were cherry-picked into the Bible. The Old Testament / New Testament, those terms, that's all given to us by this creation, this false, it was built on lies, taking ancient scriptures that are actually very beautiful. So let me say what I'm saying a little more clearly. The ancient scriptures of the world are very beautiful. They are based on the stars, which means they're a metaphor. That metaphor has to do with things that are going on inside of us. It's dramatizing our own trauma and what happens to us in trauma, but how to recover from trauma. So it's actually, I would say, positive for correcting trauma and recovering self on the individual level and on the societal level for preventing oligarchy and what we see, you know, what we see today. Oligarchy is a word that basically means, you know, rule by a small group or wealth by, you know, wealth getting sucked up to the
plutocracy. What
it means, a small group taking the gifts that are the abundant gifts of the earth for their own instead of for the people. Okay, so the myths are on a societal level against that. They're for uplifting people, not stealing from people. They're against oligarchy on a societal level, and on an individual level, they're for repairing trauma. But people who use, they're a powerful positive tool, but they can be used negatively. Just like psychology, if you had a psychologist who really understood the human brain and mind and experience and could really just was very skilled, that psychologist could really help people. But just imagine if that psychologist decided to mess with people instead, or a chiropractor who really knew everything about, but instead was an evil chiropractor. Ooh, they could do more damage than a non-trained person, or Kung Fu, or karate, or MMA, or whatever. Yeah, these sciences can be used. That's what all these Kung Fu movies from Hong Kong were always about. It'd be the bad Kung Fu master has taken over the town and is using Kung Fu, and finally a good Kung Fu master wanders in, usually like it's this old man, no one suspects him of being the Kung Fu, but he's going to use it the right way to protect the people instead of the bad guy who's trying to lord it over the people and take over the town and bully everybody. Well, what you have, so long coming around to these rituals, these ancient texts, the ones that are collected into the Bible, they are based on the stars. That's astrotheology. They are in common with all the other myths around the world. The myths of Africa are based on the stars. The myths of the Norse myths are based on the stars. And I've shown all that. The North America, the Maya, the Australia, China, Japan. It is an ancient worldwide system based on the stars. The myths that were collected into the Bible are part of that same system. They're beautiful and for a positive purpose, but people took them and twisted them like bad Kung Fu to create a traumatizing oligarchical society. The Middle Ages was oligarchy. That's why they lived in castles, so that the people didn't kill them, because it was like a small group lording it over the population. And that was an oligarchy, and traumatizing people. So what I'm saying is these rituals, those people are using these rituals to try and help advance traumatizing agendas, like the 2020 COVID operation. That was an operation. These myths teach about an invisible realm, and you can help your cause by understanding the waves and the flow of the individual realm. Like a surfer, you got to pick the right time to catch a wave. You can't catch a wave in between two waves. So this is telling you when the waves are right. They're doing these rituals to try and give themselves a little extra push for their traumatizing oligarchical agenda, which is a negative use of the stories, but
you use astrology the same way.
And it's absolutely all connected.
So you use astrology against the people instead of for the people.
And so I'll close out by saying, I believe they're getting more and more desperate and throwing more. I think the universe is actually, they're going against the waves of the universe, because the myths are about healing trauma and preventing oligarchy. So if you're trying to impose oligarchy through trauma, you're going against, you're swimming against the waves of the universe. And so they are desperately trying to hold that back with more and more in your face, bizarre ritual. That's a possible explanation of what's going on, a long explanation, but.
No, it's true. And NASA's part of it. I mean, you know all this, Brandon and Mary, So it's just more and more, like Dave says, in your face. But you can't fight the tide. You know, you can't hold it back. And I think, as I mentioned before, we're heading back up, raising in consciousness, heading back to the golden age through these yuga cycles. They can't beat that. They know their time is limited, and so they're grasping to try and, you know, any way they can. But you cannot fight the tide. The myths talk about this. Odysseus comes back and kicks the suitors out. It happens. And Saturn goes, is sent away and banished to sleep. Where is it? Under the
Ogygia. Under the waves, yes.
Under the waves.
In the cave of Ogygia.
But is promised to return. Jesus is promised to return. I mean, all these myths talk about the return. And my belief, Dave might have a different perspective, but my belief is that they're talking about the return of the golden age, when humanity's consciousness has risen to such a level that we say, F these MFers, kick them out. And it's time, their day is done. And, you know, that's the Odysseus story shows you've got to fight that. You've got to fight them and kick them out, but they do lose. So, they can throw as many rituals at us as they like, but I love the myths that give us this promise that it's not going to always be that way, and they're losing. Sorry.
No, what do you mean sorry?
Beautifully said.
Taking over.
We're
beautiful.
We're kicking around topics that are... I think everybody wants to.
I'm interested in this sun god, because we've been doing, Dave and I have been studying ancient Egypt through an online course for the last 3 months or so. It's been wonderful. But we keep seeing parallels in ancient Egyptian culture to what's unfolding in certain circumstances now in the world. And of course, there's the component of ancient Egypt where they had a plethora of gods and goddesses that they worshipped. And then along came Akhenaten, and only sun, only one god, only the sun worship, and then he was kicked out by a bunch of priests who weren't happy with that circumstance, and went back to the old religions. So I'm like, Dave and I have been like, what happened to this sun worship kind of cult or thing that was brought in by Akhenaten? And I wonder, you know, your mention of the sun cult. Do you want to tell us more about your perspective on that?
It's just, that's what it sounds like. It's just the folks that worship the sun, in the same way that people just find that the sun is the only reason for life here, and that the sun translated to, you know, God's holy sun, translated in the Bible, is really S-U-N, not S-O-N. So it was just really cryptic, a way to cryptically just celebrate the physical sun in our sky. But for some reason, you know, people had a greater knowledge or a greater experience or connection with it. Maybe that's what this lowest part of the yuga is. As you explained it, I sort of just picture a giant Ferris wheel, and we're in the bit that's come around to the bottom of said wheel, and you get dipped in a bunch of, like, poop, you know? Somebody hadn't been taking care of the bottom level, and you just get scooped in poop. And then, you know, we're on our way out, and there's, like, a hose on the other side. They'll set up the hose, but they won't clean up the poop. Anyway, so that's kind of what I picture here, is it's this just sort of this dipping into this nonsense. We're like, icky, ew. And then as we're on our way out of this, it does, I mean, maybe that is the case. Maybe that's what this sort of rebirth and this revisiting is this sort of like, we're not covered in shit anymore, but you needed to go through it to learn what it was like for some reason. So with that then comes this idea of savior and this promise, you know. But I mean, my grandma thought Jesus gonna come back in her time, and her grandma thought the same thing. And
I was saying to Dave, just was it this morning or yesterday, I don't think it's one singular person coming back. I think it's the rising consciousness in humanity that says we're not going to put up with this anymore. We can't. No. They're gone. Out with these bankers.
We're not going to take it anymore, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, look, I will say Jesus is not the sun, like in my understanding of the way the ancient myth system works. I know there are people who are doing astrotheology who basically say, yes, the 12 disciples, and therefore Jesus is the sun moving through all the 12 disciples. Okay. Certainly the sun is very important, but there's other layers to it's not just the sun moving through the constellations. That is a cycle of the year. And but Jesus also is the figure of Jesus. First of all, I don't believe that Jesus is a literal person any more than Hercules was a literal person. If you say,
Hercules
well,
real?
Well, you might be descended from Hercules. You know, different heroes.
I'm not real.
No. I'm saying that, look, the stories have profound things to teach us, but we don't have to believe that Hercules literally slew the Hydra for that Hercules myth to have tremendous, you know, lessons to teach us. Same thing with Jesus. I don't believe he's any more, quote, real than Hercules, but they're both real in a sense that they're showing us profound truths that are real. They're absolutely real. You have contact with higher self. That's the, all those characteristics of Jesus you already have access to.
Do you think, I mean, I hear people talk a lot about Christ consciousness. Do you think it's an energy, like an awareness, or that Jesus or the Hercules consciousness, or, you know, Hydra consciousness?
Well, so what I was going to say, just to finish up, I'll come to that. No, that's all right. Jesus is associated very strongly with the constellation Ophiuchus. That's not the sun. Now, the sun does go through the constellation Ophiuchus. Ophiuchus figures are a pivot between the divine and the in time. So there's the eternal and the timely, the divine and the mundane. So is there a, everybody has an eternal self that is connected to the eternal, but we're also here in time. So that's why the Ophiuchus is both in the zodiac, but also connected to the higher. It's the linchpin between the divine and the mundane, or the eternal and the stuck in time. So do I believe there's a Christ consciousness? Yes, I think everybody has. You've got an inner Jesus, an inner Buddha, an inner goddess Athena. The different myths are showing you this divine, eternal aspect. Although we're stuck here in time, we have an eternal that is supposed to be driving the chariot, the eternal self. The in the Bhagavad Gita or in the Mahabharata, there's a character named Arjun. Arjuna is how it's spelled. But Arjun, he's a warrior. He knows all the different weapons. He's got a tremendous bow, but he's filled with doubts about the upcoming battle, and he has to choose. The Lord Krishna, the God Krishna, gives him a choice. Him and the head of the bad guy side, they both get a choice. Do you want to have me, Krishna, as your divine charioteer in the battle? I'll be your charioteer, but I'll be a non-combatant. I will not pick up a sword. I will not, but I'll drive your chariot for you. I'll steer. Or do you want 1,000 of my divine celestial warriors? And the bad guy is like, I want the celestial warriors, but Arjun gets to pick first. And Arjun goes, I'll take you, Krishna. I want you to be my divine charioteer. And the head of the bad guy side is like, I can't believe he's such an idiot. He chose Krishna instead of the divine warriors. But that's actually the right choice in the story, to have Krishna as your divine charioteer. That's what you all actually have a choice. We all actually have that choice to have, to put our Christ consciousness, our, I don't know, the term Christ consciousness is loaded down with all kinds of other, just, it's, I don't even want to use the term. It's like you want to have your, the Duryodhan, the bad guy, is like, I don't want Krishna to be a non-combatant charioteer. I want the soldiers. Mm-hmm. And Arjun, before the battle, is visited by a goddess who says, Arjun, why are you so full of doubts? You've got Krishna as your divine charioteer. You're going into this battle. So we're all in this battle of this life. And we have a higher self, an eternal self, to be in charge of the chariot if we just can trust in it. So that's what I think Christ consciousness is, if I'm answering that.
Yeah.
if I'm answering what you're getting at with your question. And so is that happening on a bigger and bigger scale? I don't know. I think trauma is separation from self, and they are desperately using trauma to try and prevent that from happening. COVID was a deliberately induced
traumatizing
event.
Yeah.
9/11 was a deliberately induced traumatizing event. The whole Vietnam War, the assassination of JFK, the, you know,
the putting, Second World War, traumatizing events.
Grabbing up the children of Native Americans and putting them in schools run by priests and, you know, in these Indian schools was deliberate traumatizing. So they're doing that to prevent people from having Krishna as the charioteer, so to speak. But I do think that there is more and more awakening going on. I'll stop there.
Oh, you know, the remake of The Little Mermaid added that list. I mean, you know. Yeah.
Was that traumatizing for you?
Not me, but a lot of people, yeah. Yeah, it's just interesting as well. Just what
the first one was traumatizing. Gosh,
the first one,
terrifying.
On the next level, and then they remade it so as somehow to taint
more
your
traumatization.
Yeah. They're like, no, don't make it more traumatizing. It's got to be different. It's a silly place. And this is, you know, another idea that we're calling them ASCONs from now on, not Archons, because Archon means ruler, right? And so the ASCONs seem to be steering this interesting narrative, and especially out in the media and everything else, but it's never been more evident in Hollywood, where they just keep remaking old stuff because they don't have anything new to present. And then all of us out here going, dude, I know like 20 guys with screenplays right now that would murder with these amazing movies, but they're not, you know, getting the
Brandon,
time.
Brandon, this is a really good point. Very good point. So I also believe that doing these rituals creates this sense of they. I talked about this in my book, Myth and Trauma, which was published in 2020. Obviously, I was writing it in 2019 before the whole COVID operation was sprung on the world. But it came out in 2020. And I said, by doing these kinds of rituals and putting kind of obvious calling cards in the ritual, like using biblical references or using, you know, numerology or, you know, symbolism, flashing, you know, kind of their gang signs, they're trying to make us believe that they are so powerful. Oh, look at what they are doing. Oh, they run everything. Oh, they, that is, it's an empire of illusion. It's an empire built on lies. It's an oligarchy that is built on lies. From the start, it's built on a lie, and that tissue of lies is wearing thin. But by doing these kinds of rituals, it does make, we're so powerless. But really, it's just a giant stage production.
It's like the Wizard of Oz.
I see it like a motivators now, rather than like Archon, like, oh God, they're running everything. I see it like they're just motivating you to create your own. And as the, you know, things for your children get more ridiculous, as the oppression of women gets more ridiculous, as the nuclear destruction of the family gets more ridiculous, like those things aren't meant to oppress. They're meant to, for you to go, ooh, I'm just going to do better for myself and my family and my community. So I really see those forces as motivators now. You know, the lizard turds I've always seen as sort of like doing these horrific things out there, but they kind of give you a wink. You know, they're like, dude, if you just change, if you just decide and choose better, we have no place here. You know what I mean? It's almost like the realm functions that way because it's like a janitor sort of just keeping everything cleaned up. It's like, guys, get your shit together. Turn off the Kardashians. It's not a big deal that they have that ass. And, you know, all those kinds of things. It's like, there's a garden rotting out there in your field, but you're sitting here with the Real Housewives, whatever. This kind of thing, I find them. This is the point, right? When you find the eye rolling shit, it's not so that you focus on the fact that it's eye rolling and it's shit. You just say, ooh, okay, got it. Withdraw energy, put energy in self, put energy in relationship, put energy in home. You know, again, I say this, go clean out that little drawer in your kitchen with all the batteries and scissors and shit in it. Like there's so many things like around your home that you can be actionable in rather than outsourcing your energy to those things because you're already motivated enough not to pay attention to it. So it therefore doesn't have an effect on you. You're just like, okay, well, we'll just continue to, Mary and I are crushing it. You know what I mean? So we're just going to keep doing that. Keep having amazing conversations like this. I mean, Derek's obviously made his choice down there as the creative expansion artist, what he wants to do with his time.
Beautiful art with the spoon drawer. Look at that. I mean, I have to confess, I've been secretly watching it.
We all do.
It is so beautiful, and it looks like it's a mechanical bird about to just take wing.
Yeah. It does. I'm sure he'll get there. He's going to fashion his own little gears and shit, you know? But absolutely fascinating. You know, and this is a great time to roll it over into our afterthought. So I tell you what, look at how cute this dude is. Guys, check the show description. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. We're just watching, guys. Audio, I know people are like, you're doing a podcast right now. Speak, say words, but oh my God. Look how sweet this is.
Awesome.
Just blown away, guys. BastionMetalCreations.com down there in the show description. Definitely, if you made it this far on the audio version, go check out the video. You could see Dave's wonderful assistant work as well as Derek Bastion's beautiful work. My God.
Oh, that is so sweet.
We're just blown away by this. I'm just blown away, guys. Thank you for this magical 300. We still have a lot to cover in the afterthought. I'm going to bring up the tunnel ritual thing that they did to open that tunnel in Sweden or Norway. Do you remember this? Okay, we're going to talk about this. We've got a few things. We're going to talk about if the moon wasn't here. I want to know astrologically, if we vibrate to a time or a place or a reality where our moon doesn't exist, does it still fuck with us in the same... Does our realm and the outer planets and everything still affect and challenge us in the same way? So there are cultures that have talked about a time before the moon, and if this is just a realm, we're going to talk about this, okay? This clock in Portugal, the way it depicts the moon when it spins around and rotates, rather a luminary rotating with a dark side and a light side.
Prague,
thank you. Thank you, dear. On the fly. Yep, great job.
The astrological
in Prague,
club.
We're going to talk about this, guys. We're going to share screen, bring all that up. Derek's going to join us. Amazingly beautiful. Look at this guy down here. My God.
Oh, that is so
just
cool.
Heart overwhelmed.
That's
wow.
Gorgeous. That's just amazing. Gorgeous.
God. Okay, guys.
All it the definitely looks like a kookaburra.
Yeah, know, which does. We got to see in the wild, which most Australians don't even get to see, which is cool.
Insert but, film clip here.
Yeah. Oh, damn it. I'm going to do another one. I have to note this every time. Okay. Kooka clip. Okay. Guys, all the ways to find our phenomenal guests, as well as our incredibly cool artists, are going to be located down below. Thank you to my beautiful wife, Mary, for joining me in life as well as this 300th episode. She is. Okay, we're going to go into the afterthought. You guys support your favorite show with the link down below. Thank you all so much. And we will say, what gets y'all out of bed every morning?
Oh, good question. What gets you out of bed in the morning? I'll go first. I am a two-pronged answer. I love nature, and where I live, I lament winter every year because it's so damn cold. Wheel. And our Australian houses have no insulation. That's awful. Ugh. But I love the seasons, and I love seeing the unfolding of nature, you know, the birds singing or the jonquils coming up as they are now. So that's a joy that I love to get up for. But what keeps me going in life, I've got to say, my curiosity about the astrology, like, oh, this is coming up. What's this going to do? What impact will this have in the world? And I guess that corresponds to my love of nature. It's a curiosity about it all. I find that even though the world sometimes feels like it's going down the toilet, it's the curiosity about, well, how will we handle this? What will happen next? What beautiful things are going to pop their heads out of the ground today, you know? So probably my curiosity keeps me getting up in the morning. What about you?
Beautiful answer. David, what gets you up every day? Yeah. Your feet keep hitting the floor. What does it?
I agree that curiosity is like a really central word for you're not just curious about astrology, but about everything. And I'm the same... similar is I am excited by finding kind of the fundamentals underneath things, the things that tie it together, the structure, like why are the myths doing this? Or like I play a lot of piano. You can see the piano.
Yeah, you do. Videos like, online, guys, link down below.
So anyway, there it is, the piano. But so chords, like, there's patterns in music, obviously. I mean, I'm explaining this. Brandon is an exceptional musician. But like, to me, what's exciting is learning like the structures underneath, not just the structures that, let me explain it this way. I can memorize a really complicated song, but the person who wrote that song or who at first expressed it was probably improvising, but knowledgeable about key structures. And I'm going to shift from, I go from G to A, and then I'm going to go down to C, or what, you know, these different chord progressions. That's different than memorizing and imitating. That's like, now I'm becoming an artist because I'm learning. It's like I'm learning the language that's underneath. That to me is fascinating, whether it's in surfing or in music. It's like learning those fundamentals. Oh, this is the way you make a blues scale is a major scale is a full step, half step, full step, full step. And to make a blues scale, you do this. Oh, and then you start seeing that pattern over and over. And then you can actually start to manipulate reality for yourself. It's like what an artist is doing. We just saw Derek is, he's manipulating reality, but you kind of have to know the rules, the codes underneath to be able to do it. That fascinates me. Like I was going to say at first, well, the feeling of getting better every day excites me. Like I can play better piano, but it's not just that. It's the feeling of getting to those codes underneath. It's like, aha, I'm seeing how this is all connected. That fires me up. So it can be in music. It could be in everything has this kind of, it can be in the stars, the myths. There's a code underneath. And as you start to uncover that, you go, ooh, that's what excites me.
No surprises, Mary. He has sun in the eighth house, which is all about going deep, you know. I love
that. Well, what gets you out of bed every morning, dear?
Probably just, I mean, just the life with you and the life that we're creating, and curiosity is definitely a big one in there. Astrology is my obsession, so I am constantly thinking about it all the time. And yeah, like what is going on today, I must know. And yeah, it's just, I think it's all that rolled up into one. I really enjoy our life, and I love getting up and even just the simple, the simplicity of having coffee and going on our walk in the labyrinth, you know, like that to me is worth waking up.
Beautiful. I'm gonna cut it there. Great job, guys. Let's take just
what
a
about
quick.
Derek? What gets Derek?
We usually include the artist, but we don't. But I didn't know I didn't want to put him on the spot. Do you want to give us yours, Derek?
Yeah. So what gets me up? Usually my cat's meowing for food, followed by my daughter slamming doors, getting ready for school and getting on the bus. But, you know,
keep it beyond over that.
Yep, just family, man, and creation and music and just trying to do my best every day, you know.
Just want to take a moment here and thank our very special guests, our artists, our special afterthought guests, everything for joining us for this incredibly cool conversation. What a special, special moment here. 300. Want to thank all of you listeners and watchers and subscribers and sharers. Thank you all for just being here along with this ride and journey with us. Now, all the ways to find our guests as well as our special artists are going to be located down in the show description. But the conversation absolutely continues here with the afterthought, where again, our very special friend from Australia, Jess, joins us to hop in with that conversation, and it just goes off, guys. So absolutely check that out in the show description. A wonderful way to support your favorite show. And I mean, after the party, there's the after party, right? So guys, thanks again for the 300. This is a blast. We're just going to keep it rolling here. Lots to look forward to. Make sure you guys are checking the website. The journals are going off. We have a lot of new things happening with the publishing. And so just thanks again for the ride and for the support. Just want to remind everybody to go out into this wild-ass realm as we traverse it, and go ahead and be nice to everybody you come across. Pick up a piece of litter. Of course, get out of the respective lane in whatever country you're in for someone to pass. And above all and anything else, go out into this beautifully wild and mysterious weird realm, whatever this is, and y'all just be good to one another. Thank you so much again. 300, guys. We'll keep it going. Love y'all so much. Thanks for watching, listening, subscribing. We'll see you next time.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it. Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.